production, the logistics, the optimization of the production route, which is quite challenging as I'll describe to you, and the clinical translation of lutetium 177 to cancer patients, and with particular reference to some particular type of therapy, that is peptide receptor radionuclide therapy, talk about the theranostic potential of lutetium, and the kind of experience that we have with this particular isotope in Radiation Medicine Center. Now, for the benefit of the audience, I would like to give you some very preliminary information which may sound to be very basic information, but I would like to give this because it will be easier for me to talk about the rest of the things later on. As you know that radiation therapy may be given in different forms. Teletherapy, which is you may have heard about the cobalt-60 source, that is the external source of therapy. Brachytherapy is where we use an radioisotope in a capsulated form and we localize it to the tumor site or the cancer site. And what I will be talking about is radionuclide therapy, that is RNT, it is abbreviated as. And here, just to give you an idea about targeted radionuclide therapy, what I have written in the previous slide is radionuclide therapy, and we try to target the radionuclide to a particular disease sites, and that is referred to as targeted radionuclide therapy. For effecting therapy, we use alpha, beta, or Auger electrons because they are the particulate radiations. Now, I have tried to show you the range of these particulate emissions in the tissue, that is when it is to the extent of 0.01, that is A, this is a cell nucleus dimension, then B is a single cell dimension which is covered by alpha particles, the beta minus particles cover a range, have a range between 0.15 MeV up to C, that is few cells, or up to 100 cells depending upon their energy. So this is a wide range of beta minus energy, and here I will concentrate on talking about beta minus emitter, that is lutetium, and here I have shown you the DNA and the particular particulates, the range of the particulates, particulate radiation in DNA. So coming to what are radiopharmaceuticals and nuclear medicine, as I said, targeted radionuclide therapy can be effected with the help of what is called a radiopharmaceutical, and their application in cancer treatment is called nuclear medicine. So here we have four parts of a radiopharmaceutical. Here you see the metal, the M, which is a radioactive species, a particulate emitter in case of a therapeutic radiopharmaceutical, that is chelated with the help of a chelator, which is called the bifunctional chelator. Why bifunctional? Because on one side it chelates with the metal, and on the other side it has a covalent linking with the linker molecule. The linker molecule is a pharmacokinetic modifier, that means the nature of the linker governs its the pharmacokinetics of the particular species. Then we have the carrier or the address, the targeting species, which is the most important. And depending upon the choice of the carrier, we can target a different site. For instance, we have antigens like avidin, or we have a receptor, or we have some receptor like somatostatin, and the carrier is borne by the address is borne by the carrier molecule. So this is the actual schematic of a radiopharmaceutical which is used, and in the case of, as I said, therapeutic radiopharmaceutical, this M is a particulate emitter, whereas in the case of diagnostic radiopharmaceutical, it can be a positron emitter or it can be any gamma emitting isotope. Now coming to in vivo therapeutic radiopharmaceuticals, like so the definition of in vivo therapeutic radiopharmaceuticals are radio labeled molecules which are designed to deliver therapeutic dose of ionizing radiation to a specific disease site. So what do they achieve? They have to achieve a high target to a non-target ratio. This is obvious because we don't want the activity uptake in other non-target organs, because unnecessarily there will be irradiation. Then fast clearance from the non-target tissues, specific in vivo targeting. So we have to be very specific in targeting the molecule. Compatibility of the physical half-life with biological half-life of a of the labeled compound. As you know that this physical half-life does not remain the half-life when it is injected in vivo, and the biological half-life becomes quite important. And what plays role in governing its pharmacokinetics in vivo is the effective half-life, which is a reciprocal addition of the physical and the biological half-life. So coming to the selection of the therapeutic radionuclide, what governs the choice of this therapeutic radionuclide? The mode of decay, as you know, energy of the beta minus particles, this depends upon the application. If you have a very big tumor mass, then we will have a big, high range beta minus particle. The presence of a low energy, low yield gamma photon. Why I say low energy? Because we do not want it to cause any other effect. So a low yield gamma photon will always help us into a scintigraphic study simultaneously. The half-life is a very important parameter. Half-life is a very important characteristic, and of course we have to say, even if we think about a radionuclide, we cannot think about applying it for its treatment, because the production has to be a feasible route. There has to be a feasible route for the production and the availability with high specific activity. Now this is a very important term, high specific activity. I'll come to it later on, that we always aim at a high specific activity with respect to in vivo targeting. And of course, strong and irreversible binding with the carrier molecules, because we do not want the radionuclide to dissociate when it is injected in vivo. So how did lutetium come into being? Now here we find that there are two conventionally used radioisotopes. One is iodine-131, this is a therapeutic radionuclide, and 32-phosphorus. These were the age-old radionuclides which were used for therapy since long time. However, 131 iodine has got properties of uptake in the thyroid gland. So, radioiodine is a very, very well-known isotope for thyroid-related disorders. Whereas, in the case of 32-phosphorus, it was very specific for treatment of bone disease. So, there were not many radionuclides which were applicable for a wide range of application. Now, I will show you in my subsequent slides that how lutetium has come has helped us in designing agents with varied kind of applications. Now there was other isotopes, so the need provided the necessary impetus for identifying therapeutic radioisotopes, and in this respect yttrium and lutetium has come out as the most viable options. Now the advantages of lutetium, if you recall, I have told you about the what are the characteristics of an ideal radionuclide. If you apply them in the case of lutetium, you find that it has got a suitable nuclear decay characteristic. Why? Because it has got a half-life which is very amenable for logistic purposes. So it can be produced at one end, it has a half-life of 6.7 days, so it can be transported to remote areas with minimum loss of the activity. The maximum beta energy is not very high, so it has low tissue penetration. There are advantages for targeting microstatic diseases, that means small diseases which are microstatic, and you can target lutetium labeled radiopharmaceuticals for microstatic diseases. It gives lower dose to non-target organs, mainly the kidneys. The kidneys are the dose limiting organs for many of the radiopharmaceutical applications. Now, the presence of the low energy gamma photon in low abundance helps us in carrying out a simultaneous scintigraphic study as well as a dosimetric study. The half-life, as I said, is quite high, so it permits broad distribution, particularly in a country like India, where there is a limited reactor facility and production facilities. We can think about producing the isotope in BRC, and we can transport it into several other cities in India without much loss in the activity. And the possibilities of production with high specific activity using medium flux reactors, because I'll come to this parameter that the cross section is quite high. In fact, it is one of the highest cross section among all the therapeutic radionuclides known, and the post irradiation radio chemical processing is also quite simple. Now, sorry. Yeah. Not 100 cells, because lutetium is a medium energy beta transmitter. So I'll come to that, means I have got specific examples to tell you that. So here you see, I have tried to put a graphical representation of the number of publications on lutetium over a period of say 20 years, and here we find from 1987, the first paper appeared in 1987, and since 87 to 2000, there were only 16 publications, whereas you see the increase in the number of publication is seen from 2001 to 2017. 2017, of course, there's some drop, and till 2018, I have not put it here. Its number, its 46 publications have appeared in the literature. So this is enough to prove that there is a growing interest in this particular isotope, and you can see that there are more than 500 publications which have appeared in the last 17 years. Now, why have I chosen this topic? That to talk about lutetium-177, because BRC was an early entrant in the research and development of lutetium labeled agents. Our group was the first, one of the first few researchers to recognize the favorable nuclear decay characteristic and the feasibility of production. As I said, even if the nuclear decay characteristic is very amenable, we cannot think about the production, it is of no use. But facilities that we have, we could work out the feasibility of production of lutetium-177. The first irradiation was carried out as early as in 1999, and optimization of the irradiation parameters and the processing methods were carried out, and potential radiotherapeutic agents were prepared since long time back, and there was a regular supply of this particular isotope to All India Institute of Medical Sciences from September 2006. So you can well imagine that when we started our work and how gradually we have progressed. Now, when you consider lutetium, you will find that a comparison of the different nuclear parameter and nuclear decay characteristic, the production feasibilities and the specific activity and the application, it can be called as a metallic analog of iodine-131 with properties where, see, iodine-131 has a half-life of 8 days, and it is mostly used for thyroidal applications, whereas lutetium has a half-life of 6.73 days, and the added advantage of lutetium is that its gamma energy is much less compared to that of iodine. So when we think about clinical application, the high energy gamma of iodine is a disadvantage. And as I said, iodine is not as versatile in radionucleidic and in radiopharmaceutical preparations, and therefore we always prefer lutetium, and we call it the metallic analog of iodine. And I will show you the applications of lutetium. See, as I said, iodine-131 is suitable for targeted therapy of thyroid cancer, whereas there is no point in debating over the fact that iodine can be replaced by lutetium in for thyroidal application, whereas lutetium is suitable for other non-thyroidal applications. So here we see the potential applications. As I said, the most important application of lutetium is in a particular type of therapy, which is peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. I will come to that later on. And the other targeted therapies that can be affected with lutetium are the monoclonal antibody used with the monoclonal antibodies as carriers, and the therapy is called radioimmunotherapy. Receptor specific peptides, which is called peptide receptor radionuclide therapy, and it is useful for small tumor because of its low, comparatively low beta energy, for metastatic disease, and it has got a low kidney toxicity, which, as I said, is in most of the cases a dose limiting organ. Now, if you see the position of lutetium, because we had to review all these things for our carrying out the production feasibilities of lutetium. So it is the heaviest radiolanthanide, and the atomic number is 71, and the most stable oxidation state is +3. In most of the complexes, we use the +3 oxidation state of lutetium. In that +3 oxidation state, it has got a ionic radius of 89.1 picometer. and it forms very high stability complexes with 8 to 9 coordinated chelates with these donor ligands, nitrogen, oxygen, phosphorus and sulfur. In the subsequent slide, I show you the example of the chelates with which lutetium forms very stable complexes. Out of this DOTA, this is an acronym for tetraazacyclododecane, 1,4,7,10 tetraacetic acid. This is DOTA. Most of the complexes of lutetium are with DOTA and they are used for biological applications. And here you find that you see the log of the stability constants, you find that they are very high. Log stability constants of the complexes are very high with maximum value for DOTA. And this is one of the schematics of the lutetium DOTA complex, the lutetium complex with the DOTA by functional chelating agent. Now, coming to production of lutetium, here I'll tell you that when do we consider that our isotope production is feasible? We consider normally the activity equation N phi sigma 1 minus E, this is the equation minus E to the power minus lambda T. This is the activity produced in Becquerel. If all these are the flux of the reactor, lambda is a decay constant. I am not going into the details of it. In the case of lutetium, what happens, you can see that sigma, the cross section is 2100 bonds. So, as I said, it is one of the highest cross section among all the metallic radionuclides that we can think about. The most common route for producing 177 lutetium is 176 N gamma to produce 177. There is minimum radiochemical processing and the specific activity is of the order of 20 curies per milligram when irradiation is effected at a flux of 1 into 10 raised to 14. The half-life is 6.73 days. The beta energies I have shown here, I have shown you earlier also, and there is a simultaneous gamma emission of 113 keV and 208 keV which can be used for imaging purpose. So, here I have shown you what are the possible production routes in the research reactor. See, lutetium 176 can be produced by N gamma, it is called the direct route, that is from N gamma you get 177 lutetium, and what is called the indirect route is ytterbium 176 is irradiated, it forms ytterbium 177 and it decays to lutetium 177. In the subsequent slide I have shown you the schematics of the production, that is here it is 2090 approximately is 2100, and if you take a 2.6 natural target where the abundance of 176 lutetium is 2.6%, then we get lutetium 177 and this is the radionucleidic impurity which is there, that is 177M. With a half-life of 160.5 days. Whereas if you go from ytterbium 176, this is the production route which is followed and you get lutetium 177. You may be aware that from the ytterbium 176, this lutetium which is produced is exclusively lutetium 177. It does not have the carrier. Whereas in this route, the direct route, we will have some unreacted lutetium 176 as well. So, it's the not the carrier free route. So, to our radio, yes, please. Yes. Easily available is ytterbium 176, but there are problems of separating lutetium from ytterbium, you know, because of the similarity in chemistry, we have problems in separating and we should have very good separation facilities for doing it. So, that is what I have tried to show you here, that even following the direct route, that is from 176 lutetium, what lutetium we get is good enough for our radiopharmaceutical preparation and applications in nuclear medicine. Now, this is a Dhruva reactor and here we are fortunate enough to be given the highest flux position of 1 into 10 raised to 14 and this is the isotope, this is the position which is available to us for irradiating 176 lutetium. We have done on small scale production from ytterbium also, but the practical feasibilities of separation are not means amenable for use of that indirect route for lutetium production. So, in BRC, the production of lutetium is by the direct neutron activation, and as I have said just now, that the typical values of the specific activity. Now, why the specific activity is important, I will come to that later on. we get specific activity values of 20 to 35 curies per milligram. So this is considered to be quite high enough, and large quantities can be produced because we are taking an enriched target, 84% enriched target, and it is quite cost effective. And the lutetium quality, that is 177 lutetium what we get, it can compete with any other source elsewhere in the world. There are commercial suppliers of lutetium who give us from the ytterbium route, that is the indirect route, and there the specific activity is higher, but still we prefer this route because it is very cost effective. We can prepare it in adequate quantities, and the typical values of specific activities are also quite suitable for our kind of work. The post irradiation processing, as you know, the irradiated targets have to be processed, and I am not going into the details of it. And finally, the quality control of the radionuclide that is produced, that lutetium chloride, is assessed with the help of this production facility. And the kind of radionucleic purity, here you find that we do a HPG and we find that only contaminant is 177 m lutetium, and that extent of 177 m lutetium is 250 nanocuries per millicurie at end of bombardment. So this is also permissible in case of our medical applications. So we find that this is the most feasible route. 160 days, yeah. So this is a chemical purity, as you know that chemically also it has to be pure, and we have done a typical analysis of the chemical purity also, and in most of the cases it is below the detectable limit. Coming to the yields of lutetium, here I will try to explain a very interesting thing. Here if we do a calculation of the specific activity, theoretical specific activity that we get a value of 12.66, whereas the specific activity which we get is 28.13, you know. So there is the experimental ratio, the ratio between the experimental and the theoretical works out to be 2.22. Now why so? So here we find that this is because that there is not only contribution from the thermal neutrons, there is contribution from the epithermal neutrons as well, and resonance capture occurs very close to the thermal region, that is we get a peak at 1.141 eV. So this is the reason why we always see a high experimental to the theoretical specific activity that we get. Now coming to the irradiation time variation with the thermal neutron flux, we find that if we use this, these are all experimentally calculated, if we use a flux of 2 × 10^15, this is, as I said, we don't get this kind of flux in our Dhruva. So here we find that the saturation is reached at about 10 days, whereas in the case of 5 × 10^14, the saturation is reached around 25 days, whereas in case of 1 × 10^14, that is the experimental one which we are actually using, we find that the saturation is reached at around 21 days or so. That means 3 half-lives. Now why so? These are very interesting features, and we had to do a rigorous optimization to find out what should be our irradiation time in the reactor. Now you see normal standard activity versus irradiation time curve, where we find that the saturation activity is reached at around 5 to 6 times the half-life. Whereas in case of lutetium, we find with an irradiation of 1 × 10^14, the saturation is reached at around 21 days. That is because there is a significant target burn-up at very high flux, that is, and that burn-up is proportionate with the flux which is used for irradiation. For our kind of flux, we have found that at around 2100 bands, for the cross-section of 2100 bands, the saturation is reached at 21 days. So there is no point in irradiating further. So we take out the target within 21 days of irradiation, and the equation also, the normal activity equation had to be modified, and we get this kind of activity equation, where we find that the specific activity versus time of irradiation curve passes through a maxima at 21 days. So the activity equation also had to be modified for the production of lutetium. So this is the second method, that is the ytterbium route. I said that we followed this route also for small scale preparation of lutetium 177 to have a comparison, and here you will find that obviously the typical yields are 30 millicurie of 177 lutetium at from 1 milligram of 99% enriched 176 ytterbium, but normally because of the cost effectiveness we do not use this route for production of lutetium. So what we follow is a direct method for producing lutetium from 176 lutetium N gamma. So now I'll come to the second part, that is the clinical translation of lutetium 177 in the form of radiopharmaceutical preparations, and in this first I would like to talk about peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. As I said, there are very commonly occurring cancer which is called neuroendocrine cancers. They are cancers from originating from the endocrine system and the nervous system, or more specifically you can say the various interfaces between the two systems. So there is a wide range of cancers which are having neuroendocrine origin. Now the incidence of NETs, which I will abbreviate NETs, neuroendocrine tumors as NET, is estimated to be around 3 new cases per 1 lakh people every year. Every year new cancer patients registered are about 7 lakhs. This is some statistics which I would like to give so that you realize the importance of treating these kind of cancers. So the treatment of neuroendocrine tumors, the most common modalities are chemotherapy and then surgery, and in particular targeted radionuclide therapy, that is peptide receptor radionuclide therapy, is for inoperable and metastasized NET. I will explain metastasized. Inoperable you must be understanding. So this is the only treatment, effective treatment known for inoperable neuroendocrine cancers. And how is it effective? Now we find that somatostatin receptors, as I said, this is peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. Now these kind of cancers, they have an overexpression of some kind of receptors which are called somatostatin receptors. Somatostatin is actually a growth hormone in our body with 14 amino acids, but it has got a very short half-life. So we had to design, rather literature has reported the use of some analogous peptides which resemble somatostatin in their biological efficacy, and they have been labeled, they have found that somatostatin receptors are overexpressed in a variety of cancers of neuroendocrine origin, and these peptide receptors are overexpressed in these kind of cancers. Now what are the kind type of cancers? They are neuroblastoma, some medullary thyroid carcinoma, then prostate cancer, small cell lung cancer, and so on and so forth. There are many other types of cancers which have an overexpression of somatostatin receptors. Now example of a peptide which mimics somatostatin. As I said, we cannot use somatostatin and radiolabel it with lutetium because it has got a very finite half-life within our body. So we have to design, or we have to think about a mimic of the somatostatin. That is, in this respect, this particular peptide, this tate, I have shown a structure of tate also in my subsequent slide. Tyrosine octreotide is actually a octapeptide which very well mimics a somatostatin growth hormone in our body. And this tate is conjugated with DOTA, which I showed you, that is a bifunctional chelator, to give DOTA tate. And DOTA tate is labeled with lutetium 177 to target the somatostatin receptors overexpressed in neuroendocrine cancer. So this is the principle of peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. And lutetium has been found to be very ideally suited for PRRT. And in fact, lutetium DOTA tate is the first approved radiopharmaceutical in India. Lutetium-based radiopharmaceutical in India. Now, we did not go to tate immediately. We had to do a lot of research, and we started with something called a lanreotide. This is a peptide. Our initial work was with lanreotide. In fact, when we were synthesizing this lanreotide here and coupling it with DOTA, I have done the NMR studies here in TIFR, and we found that this lanreotide, you know, there are some kind of receptor subtypes also. I talked about somatostatin receptors. They have subtypes of type from 1 to 5. So lanreotide does not universally bind with all the receptor subtypes, whereas dotatate, what I showed you later on, I mean earlier, binds to all the subtypes in universally. So this is the lutetium dotatate. It differs in some of the functional groups from lanreotide. This was coupled with lutetium, I mean with DOTA, and we label it with lutetium. And as you see that it is was indigenously developed in BRC. Why I say indigenous is because we have used lutetium 177 produced from the Dhruva reactor. Nowhere in the world they can think about using carrier added lutetium for producing this product. And mind you, we have done clinical studies with this, and we have found, you could see, I have got in my subsequent slides to show you the promise of this particular radiopharmaceutical. As you see here, I have tried to list only the number of patients who have been treated with lutetium dotatate in RMC. It is about 2,500. We have started in 2013, and over a period of 4 years till October 2017, we have treated 2,500 patients in RMC alone. Now coming to dotatate cold kit. Now let me tell you a little about the cold kit. Cold kit means we have all the freeze-dried composition of all the chemicals required for preparing the radiopharmaceutical. It is in a freeze-dried form. All you need to do is just to add the activity, formulate the agent, do a quality control and inject it into patients. Now we have gone into the development of the dotatate cold kit, and that is because initially what we used to do is to go to the hospitals and prepare this reagent in with the adequate specific activity that is suitable for injection into patients. And we have found that it depends, the preparation of dotatate, lutetium dotatate, is very tricky. It depends upon all kind of the pH variations. It is very susceptible to pH variations. It is very susceptible to the amount of ingredients we use, and it varies. The protocol of synthesis varies from batch to batch depending upon the specific activity of the lutetium that we get from Dhruva reactor. So there is a lot of standardization which had to be done at the user end in order to make it suitable in suitable specific activity for injection into patients. Therefore, that provided the impetus for having a dotatate cold kit, where we have all the ingredients in a freeze-dried form, and we have standardized the ingredients in such a way that it can take care of specific activities of a particular range, you know, like from 20 to 25 millicuries per microgram. If the specific activity is that is between that range, the dotatate kit will work. So it becomes handy at the user end to just add the radioactivity and use it. So this development of dotatate kit was again a major development in the field of PRRT. So this is advantages. I'm not going into this. The preparation protocol is very simple. And with the existing radiopharmacy facility, you know, in all these hospitals they have a radiopharmacy unit. So with the existing radiopharmacy facility, and it can be made, and it requires lesser preparation time and lesser dependency on the skill and technique of the radiopharmacy personnel, lesser possibilities of batch failure, because you get this lutetium and if there is a batch failure, then you will have it. You will have patients waiting in the clinic and you will not be able to prepare it. And there have been incidences where when you prepare the in situ preparation, there have been failures in the sense that we have to modify the pH and we have to do a rigorous standardization for getting it in the suitable form. And of course, lesser radiation exposure to the radiopharmacy personnel, which is from the safety point of consideration, it is very amenable. Coming to the PRRT practices in India, that is peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. Here I have listed a few hospitals because they were the ones who have first started with PRRT. And All India Institute of Medical Sciences have started way back in 2011, their first PRRT service, followed by there were a host of other hospitals. And today there are about 25 centers in India who are using PRRT for treatment of patients with neuroendocrine cancers. Now coming to metastatic bone pain palliation, if you recall in one of my previous slides I have showed that lutetium is a medium energy beta emitter, and therefore it is very suitable for treatment of metastatic bone pain. Now, just to give you an example, some introduction about what is bone metastasis. You see, bone metastasis is secondary cancer in the bone, and it's a very common occurrence in the case of patients suffering from primary carcinoma of the breast, of the lung and the prostate. And it is manifested in immobility, pathological fracture, bone marrow failure, neurological symptoms, hypercalcemia, etc. So they have excruciating pain in their bones, and therefore this particular agent was, means lutetium was considered to be one of the therapeutic radionuclides which could be used for metastatic bone pain palliation, what I say. And the available modes for treatment of metastatic bone pain is with morphine, with multiple side effects, hemibody radiation means whole body radiation. Whole body radiation will have its own side effects. So therefore, something which is very targeted, what I talked about was targeted radionuclide therapy. So something very targeted could be used for treatment of metastatic bone pain. And the suitable radiopharmaceuticals are multidentate phosphonates. Why phosphonates? Because you know that phosphonates have affinity for calcium in the bones, and there is increased localization in metastatic lesions because there are increased metabolic activity in metastatic lesions. So metastasis is what I told you is a secondary cancer developing in sites other than that of the primary cancer. So mostly bone metastasis is a secondary cancer, and lutetium has been used for treatment of metastatic bone pain. Here we have worked on synthesis of several types of phosphonates, and we find that the most ideal one is EDTMP, this one, ethylene diamine tetramethylene phosphonate. Now I will tell you why we have taken up this molecule for labeling with lutetium and developing the agent is because we find that EDTMP has been used with samarium. Samarium 153 is another radiolanthanide, and samarium 153 is an approved product for lutetium, bone pain palliation. So we found from the regulator's point of view, it will be more easier for us to get a regulatory approval. And mind you, as I said, these things are not very simple. We develop an agent, we have to pass it through all the regulatory approvals before it can be actually injected into patients. So there are a lot of protocols which we need to follow, and we found that these considerations, that lutetium has got ideal characteristics of a beta emitter which is suitable for metastatic bone pain palliation, and we have found that EDTMP has already been used by with samarium. So why not couple the two? So it was uniting the favorable features of EDTMP and lutetium 177, and mind you, we had the advantage of being able to carry out, you know, all these agents or radiopharmaceuticals. They can get the status of regulatory approval when we pass it through several studies. Means like we have to do a small animal study, then we have to do a large animal study. So in this particular case, it was easier for us to have a higher animal study done with this, because we had a Hungarian collaboration with a veterinary institute in Hungary, where this lutetium EDTMP was injected into dog patients, and the regulatory approval was obtained subsequently after carrying out all the things and the documentation. And here we find that we have lutetium EDTMP. The first, again, the patient injected was in AIIMS, All India Institute of Medical Sciences. Here I show this significance. You see there is uptake of this radiopharmaceutical in the metastatic regions. These are metastatic regions, means this patient may have got primary cancer of the prostate or the lungs or whatever. So he has developed metastatic sites of cancer where you see accumulation. Now why I have written 1 day post administration and 6 day post administration? The significance lies in the fact that some isotope which can be able to give the palliation effect for a longer time will be something what is desirable. And in this respect, because 6 days post administration, lutetium has got a half-life in bones to the order of 3000 days. So something which is still kept localized in the bones after 6 days post administration the effective half-life is physical half-life is 7 days, approximately 7 days. So this proves to be one of the very good isotopes for bone pain palliation. So subsequently, many other preparations have been done. Now here, I showed you a series of phosphonates which we have synthesized, and one more cyclic phosphonate. Now let me tell you one thing here. EDTMP, what I showed you, was an acyclic phosphonate, whereas DOTMP, this one is again an acronym, it is a cyclic phosphonate. Now when in course of our studies, we have found that there are two parameters which are very important when we are considering a radiopharmaceutical for injection in vivo. That is, one is the thermodynamic stability and one is the kinetic stability. What is the thermodynamic stability? You know very well, but it is a kinetic stability which becomes very important when you inject something in the human system, because there are so many challenging ions. So the kinetic stability of the agent is a very important consideration, you know, so it should not get challenged with other elements. So other metals which are present, or other elements which are present in the biological system. And in this respect, we found that cyclic polyaminophosphonates, that is DOTMP, are traced better than the acyclic phosphonates with respect to kinetic stability. So this product is also under development. Initial studies have been carried out in patients, and here also we find that the retention time in the bone is quite high. So coming to radioimmunotherapy, as I said, you must have heard about chemotherapy. So immunotherapy is the use of, not a radioimmunotherapy, I'm talking about immunotherapy, where therapy of particular type of cancers are effected with the help of injecting monoclonal antibodies. So here the monoclonal antibody used is rituximab and trastuzumab. What happens is, when you are using a conventional immunotherapy, you have to inject larger quantities of rituximab or trastuzumab, and for that matter also for chemotherapy, when we are injecting a particular chemotherapeutic drug, we are using it in the order of milligram quantities. That is what I showed you in PRRT. There we are using around 15 milligrams of that somatostatin, what I showed you, that is available as a chemotherapeutic, and that is called sandostatin. We are using 15 milligram of sandostatin, whereas when we are using a radio-labeled derivative, that is the dotatate, we are using just 250 microgram of the peptide. So you can well imagine that the side effects can be taken care of when you are using a radionuclide for your therapy. Here also the similar factor plays a role. Rituximab and trastuzumab are monoclonal antibodies, and the amount that is used for immunotherapy is quite high. So when you are labeling it with lutetium, we find that the effectiveness increase because of the fact that this is a radiotherapy, the radiotherapy, radionuclide. So we are cashing here more on the therapeutic potential of 177 lutetium, and rituximab and trastuzumab are the ones who are bearing the labels, you know. So they just take the agent to the cancer site, and the trick is played with the help of lutetium, the particulate emitter. So these are the essence of radioimmunotherapy, and some preliminary studies which has been carried out in Tata Memorial Hospital with one of the agents, that is lutetium trastuzumab, in a breast cancer patient. I tried to show you the images. These studies are still on. This is not an approved radiopharmaceutical, but preliminary dosimetric studies, you know, dosimetric studies are also very important for injecting. So the dosimetric studies are being carried out with this lutetium trastuzumab. Coming to radiation synovectomy, now here I have tried to show you the wide range of application of lutetium. This is, you know, radiation synovectomy refers to the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. Here we are injecting something called lutetium hydroxyapatite. Hydroxyapatite is a constituent of the human bone, and it is injected into the synovial cavities, that is the swollen cavities of the bones, and treatment is affected with the help of this lutetium hydroxyapatite. Here the mechanism of uptake is different, phagocytosis. I'm not going into the details of it, but lutetium hydroxyapatite is also an approved product for treatment of radiation synovectomy. Coming to the other agents which have shown quite a lot of promise, and again I have tried to list them here, without going much into much details, as you know, ovarian cancers, they have a steroidal receptor overexpression, and here estradiol has been labeled with lutetium. In the second, you find that for hypoxic tumors, some of the tumors, they become hypoxic. Hypoxic means the oxygen concentration of the tumors decrease, and in that respect, the vectors which are used, molecular vectors which are used for targeting tumor hypoxia is actually nitroimidazole. There is a chemistry associated with that. This nitro group, when it, this particular species, when it enters a hypoxic cell, the nitro group undergoes successive reduction because of the lack of oxygen in the cell. So it undergoes reduction, it gets converted into hydroxylamine species, and they get trapped in the cell. So why not tag a nitroimidazole with lutetium with the help of a BFCA, that is DOTA, and we have done experiments with metronidazole and sanazole, which is again a nitrotriazole, and we have found that the results are quite promising. Coming to porphyrins, as you know, they are widely used for photodynamic therapy, and they have an inherent affinity for getting accumulated into tumor tissue. Here we have used lutetium for labeling with porphyrins, and we have done some preliminary studies of lutetium labeled porphyrins. These are water soluble porphyrins. Now this is the latest. Here we have done some work on targeting with the help of carbon nanospheres. See, we have made carbon nanospheres, and we have done multiple targeting of different species. This is a tripeptide that is called RGD, glycine, arginine, and D-aspartic acid. This is specific for melanoma tumors. We have done a targeting of carbon nanospheres by labeling it with, tagging it with RGD peptides as well as lutetium labeled DOTA, and we have carried out nano targeting of melanoma tumors with the help of this concept. Coming to theranosis, as the name indicates, you can understand, theranosis is a combination of therapy and diagnosis, and this is one of the very key modalities which is practiced in recent nuclear medicine. And here we find that theranosis has a combination of two interdependent applications. And here, how does it help? You know, it helps in individualizing the dose treatment. So this personalized medicine is now actually the key word in present nuclear medicine, and for other fields of medicine also, because you know why, by the term personalized, what I mean is the dose regimen can be personalized for a particular patient, you know, for the particular patient's requirement. We need not give, you know, for instance, you take a radiopharmaceutical A and we say that okay, this is so many grays of radiation are required for treatment of patient using this radiopharmaceutical. Whereas it may not be suitable for a person, it varies from person one to other second person. So what happens is that the individualized treatment regime, when it is actually given, it proves to be more effective. We unnecessarily do not have to give radiation. For a pediatric patient, we do not need to give the radiation dose which is decided for an adult. So that is why theranosis helps in that way. We can decide on the dose that has to be given, and we can individualize the therapy for the particular patient. So this is possible with the help of, again, theranostic pair of radiopharmaceutical. There are three options. As you see, here I have tried to see the first option, which is the use of technetium and rhenium. They are two elements belonging to the same group, technetium 99M and 188 rhenium. Technetium is a diagnostic one, and rhenium is the therapeutic radiopharmaceutical, so radionuclide. So using a matched pair, technetium and rhenium, we can affect theranosis. We get the diagnostic information by using a technetium labeled radiopharmaceutical, and we get the therapeutic, we do the therapy with the rhenium labeled one. The second thing is the classical use of radioiodine. See, iodine has got multiple radioisotopes, out of which this 123 iodine is a SPECT radiopharmaceutical, which is produced in the cyclotron, and it gives a whole lot of information, SPECT information. So this is used as the diagnostic isotope, and as I said, 131 iodine is a particulate emitter. It is used for therapy. So this is the second example by which you can affect theranosis. And the most desirable and the wide ranging option is the use of a single radionuclide. You can imagine that though there can be some variation by using two different radionuclides, this option is totally ruled out in the case of the third case, where we are using the same radionuclide for carrying out the pre-therapeutic diagnosis as well as the dosimetry, and then we are subsequently using it for effecting therapy. So in this respect also, lutetium comes under the third category, that is, it is ideal from the theranostic perspective because we are using the same isotope for carrying out the therapy. I have shown you some images of lutetium dotatate where we can get the diagnostic information by carrying out a SPECT image, that is single photon emission computed tomography, and by using the gamma emissions of lutetium, this low energy gamma emissions of lutetium, and we can effect the therapy using the beta energy. So lutetium from a theranostic perspective is also very suitable. Now in this case, this is a new development of theranostic radiopharmaceuticals. It is used in the prostate cancer detection and treatment, and mind you, this is being widely practiced now in India. It has become a very important modality. Here we have used a matched pair, 68 gallium, and PSMA stands for prostate specific membrane antigen, which are targeted in case of prostate cancer. So these two ligands are used for targeting the PSMA overexpression in prostate cancer. The 68 gallium is a PET isotope. So it is available from a generator, and because obviously PET has got specific advantages over PET, SPECT, we do not use lutetium gamma for doing the detection. Here we have an analogous radiopharmaceutical which very well matches with the lutetium PSMA, and it gives the PET information. So you can see from the quality of images in my subsequent slide. So this is a matched pair which is used for treatment of management of prostate cancer. Here you find, these are the gallium PSMA images of a prostate cancer. You see the metastatic sites of the patient, where all the cancer has metastasized, and the treatment is carried out with lutetium PSMA. So we do a simultaneous theranostic study using these two matched pair of radiopharmaceuticals. Now this particular theranostic pair has been developed in RMC in the past 1.5 years. When I say development, means we have done the optimization and of both the radiopharmaceuticals, we have got it approved by the regulatory committee, and we have started using it since April 2017. Till today, some 80 therapies have been carried out with lutetium PSMA, and this is on the increase. Whereas gallium PSMA PET CT, so far, this is a diagnostic procedure which is carried out in RMC. Only RMC, I am giving you the values. Then 280 patients have been tested with gallium PSMA for detecting whether they are having prostate cancer or not, and with whatever metastatic lesions they are having. So these are the two lutetium based radionuclide therapy which are provided in RMC at present. There are others also, but here I have listed these two because these are currently in being practiced. One is lutetium dotatate for neuroendocrine cancer. We started in February 2013, and I do not have the number for the rest of India, but in RMC itself it is 2500. And what I have not talked about is the cost effectiveness. See, in RMC we use the lutetium which is available from the Dhruva reactor, so we are not charging the patients for the lutetium. And we are doing the patient, I mean we are doing the therapy of neuroendocrine cancer in RMC with a amount of ₹10,000 versus 1.5 lakh per patient dose. And mind you, there are 4 cycles of treatment which are required. So it is so very cost effective, lutetium dotatate. Similarly, lutetium PSMA, if you see, here also we have started since April 2017, and as I have shown you that 85 patients have been treated with this, and the cost effectiveness is of the order of 25,000 to 30,000 versus 2 lakhs in private hospitals. So you see the amount of cost benefit that we are providing. rather the department, sorry. Not the machine. No, no, it's not the machine. See, here we do not give the machine is not important because we are giving the therapy, we are just injecting the radiopharmaceutical. See, in private centers, they house the patients also. We do not charge the patient for hospitalization, first thing. Second thing, you know, in most of the cases, this PSMA and Dotatate, they are very, very exorbitantly priced, you know. So we are not charging the patients for that. And we are using minimum amount of the peptide. See, in hospitals, they don't care about, I mean, private hospitals, they will not be too much concerned about the amount they are using. We are using minimum amount and it is very, very subsidized treatment. So we are not charging the patients for the Dotatate at all or for the PSMA. It is only the price of this lutetium and the barest minimum peptide cost which is required. So that gives you the advantage. It is difficult to say, but there are many other hospitals which are doing it. And I do not know, I think peptide receptor radionuclide therapy is being used now in some 25 hospitals in India. No, 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 not, see, yeah, much smaller number. I can say AIIMS will have a comparable number, and even PGI Chandigarh, means that Postgraduate Institute of Medical Education and Research, that PGI Chandigarh also has a substantial number of patients, but in RMC it is very high, means we have a waiting list. In fact, Dhruva reactor was shut down, so we have now a waiting list of patients. So these are the lutetium based agents which have been approved. That is, first and foremost, this sterile pyrogen free clinical grade lutetium chloride, which BRC is now supplying to other users with a specific activity of greater than 20 curies per milligram, EDTMP cold kits and ready to use lutetium EDTMP. These are the other two products, lutetium Dotatate for NET and lutetium for radiation synovectomy, and PSMA for castrate resistant prostate cancer, that is what it's called. And the other lutetium radiopharmaceutical which are in clinical use, but other than the ones which we are using in India, are lutetium CC. This is for all these different types of, they have different types of application. This is more to show you that the wide range of applications of lutetium based radiopharmaceuticals. See, Lutathera here, lutetium Dotatate, this is an approved product in Poland, but as late as in 2018, in the last month, this lutetium Dotatate was not an approved radiopharmaceutical in Europe. So they have got the approval of lutetium Dotatate for patient injection as late as in April 2018, whereas for us it was much earlier. Yeah. And of course, lutetium EDTMP for skeletal metastasis. We are in the process of development of this rituximab, and this also we have in the pipeline for consideration for treatment of prostate cancer. This has got some other benefits compared to lutetium PSMA. JF591 is a monoclonal antibody based product. So to summarize, I would like to say that there are various possibilities as I have explained to you, and I would like to emphasize on the fact that the lutetium which is available to us is suitable for all kinds of applications. Whatever I have discussed, the number of radiopharmaceuticals that have been approved by using lutetium from the BRC reactor suffices to say that means it is suitable for use in radiopharmaceutical preparations, and they are all approved radiopharmaceuticals. So it is, as a you can say that at this moment there is a lot of potential for lutetium in India, because we are able to get this isotope abundantly from the Dhruva reactor with adequate specific activity which is used, which is suitable for radiopharmaceutical preparation. And therefore that prompts me to say that lutetium is indeed a gold mine. It is relatively less explored, as I would say, because there are various other possibilities, also various other diseases which we can for which we can think about, and of course work is underway for designing those agents as well. So thank you very much. They get it from BRC. They do the remaining preparation. See, of late, this ready to use, you know, means our regulatory committee does not approve the use of therapeutic products which will be formulated at the user end. Why? Because the large amount of radioactivity they have to handle, and there is no mechanism to check also what is the quality which is being injected. So always they advocate the use of ready to use therapeutic preparations. Now, whereas cold kits become very important in the case of diagnostic radiopharmaceuticals, for therapeutic it is always the ready to use preparation which BRC would like to supply. So BRIT has standardized this method of lutetium dotatate preparation, adopting what we have developed, and they have started their supply from, I think, December 2017. They have started their ready to use lutetium dotatate preparation to all users. But there are those 8 hospitals which I showed you, they are still continuing by not importing. They are using the lutetium that we produce and give from Dhruva reactor. Some private centers are there who are using imported lutetium from the no carrier added route. They are getting, but they are having very high specific activity, but that is not required. What I showed you, it is not required. So why go for it also? No, I don't think, because we were in the process of thinking whether it is like 10 raised to 13 or so. So 10 times more, yeah. Dhruva, yes. Yeah. And another possibility is, as I said, we did some work on separation, but to like scale it up to the pilot scale and do it, because of the similarity of chemistry between ytterbium and lutetium, separation becomes very challenging, you know. So we have to have very good separation methods of, because slight traces of ytterbium is also not permissible in the lutetium. It has got a similar uptake in other, in particularly in the bones. So regulators will be quite stringent about that. Yeah, it is produced in the reactor, but that is all for academic this thing.
No, accelerator.
Yeah, accelerator.
Yes. No, but if you had access to, let's say, very high current, would that be feasible for the chemistry separation of the air? That would have to be developed by, you know, what I'm saying is that this all depends on flow only.
Yeah, that's true.
So if something happens,
it
shut down.
Yeah. Yeah, that has happened in recent times. Moreover, you know, means now there is a see, all these irradiations we carry out with using enriched target to the extent of 84%. So now there is some restriction on the use of 84% enriched lutetium. It's not as easily available. Isoflex is not giving us. So they are saying that means it will take time, and so we are just keeping our fingers crossed. But 84%, if it is not there. No, it is since 2013 we have started. The amount of activity required per patient is around 150 to 200 millicuries. Milligram of peptides, 150 to 200. Ah, okay. Enriched isotopy, we are giving around 100 milligrams for irradiation, and we produce from there around 8 to 10 curies.
Okay,
yeah, we get our supply to the extent of 4 curies per week, because for us it is 3 times in a month we are getting lutetium from BRC, and we are treating some 20 patients per week. And they have to come up for a follow-up also. In some, ideally 4 to 5 cycles are required for glutathione. Time period between the two cycles is around, that of course will be around 2 months or so, 2 to 3 months. We ask them to come back for imaging, for a scintigraphy, and then we decide whether It can be, it need to be injected second time or third time. Yes, yes, about an year. Yeah. So we are in the process. See, now at this moment, we are not injecting more than 200 millicuries. But we are in the process of doing a dosimetric analysis to see whether, you know, there is something called the maximum tolerated dose. So if we can determine the maximum tolerated dose and if it is more than 200 millicuries, sometimes it may be better for us to inject more than 200 millicuries also. So we are carrying out that study, the dosimetric analysis of determining the maximum tolerated dose in terms of kidney toxicity and platelet counts and things like that. So if need be, we can increase the dose also. No, no. The primary site is of main concern for particularly lutetium dotatate. But as for others, if you think about EDTMP, then metastatic lesions are the ones which will tell you what kind of dose is required for treatment. See, side effects for instance for this PRRT, this lutetium dotatate, I showed you yttrium also, right? So the kidney is a limiting organ. You know, we always see how much of the, because these radiopharmaceutical, what is not taken up in the cancer sites, they get excreted through the kidneys. So we always see how much is the residence time in the kidneys. Other than that, it is very targeted. It goes only to that particular site only, and to the metastasized sites also. See, these, it depends upon the peptide that is used, because that peptide is the one who targets the radiation to the cancerous sites. It's a carrier, bearing the label. And usually in this kind of thing, to answer your question, what happens is the patient is given a injection of amino acid. You know, infusion of amino acid starts before the therapy is actually effected. So the kidney gets saturated with the amino acid, so uptake is even less. So clearance is very fast. So our aim is to make it get cleared through the kidneys as fast as possible, because there are not much of many other target organs. The target to non-target uptake is quite high. It's very high, in fact. See, they are housed in the facility for about 1 or 2 days, because uptake is very less, you know. So, and then they are given a certificate. If they want to go, they can go after 2 days. It's very much different from iodine, where we have to house the patient for a longer time because of the high component gamma. Yes. It depends upon biological half-life, depends upon what is the tissue. For instance, biological half-life of lutetium in bones is around 3000 days, as I said. Some 10 days in the tumor sites. So, it depends upon the tissue also. There is no way to retrieve it back. It will last for much longer. That is our intention, so that it remains in the disease site for a longer time, for a therapeutic product. No. Yeah, it remains there. No, 3 times a week. 3 times a week. I'm sorry, 3 times a month, yeah, 3 times a month. No. No, lifetime is 6 days, but we get, see, 3 times it is irradiated in the Dhruva reactor. So 3 times in a month we get the supply. So every 10 days we are getting it. We schedule. No, but generally we time our patients in that way. Say a group of patients who get in the first week, they are not asked to come in the second week. So second week we ask another fresh group of patients to come. So they get a fresh supply of lutetium without much decay. Yes, yes, yeah. We get it from Isoflex, then we get it from trace metals, so enriched lutetium. No, no, you have to import it. Particularly these enriched targets have to be imported. No point. Yeah, that is the thing. Yes, yes. We don't. So that is what I said. You see, what happens is 176 lutetium remains unreacted, and that is our that can be a major problem. See, when we are targeting a limited number of receptors in the cancer sites, what happens is we would like to get it targeted with a radioactive species only, isn't it? So if cold lutetium is remaining, it will go and saturate the receptor sites. But that is what means we have done the optimization studies, and we have found that if the specific activity is to the extent of 25 to 30, the uptake in the receptor is quite optimum. Even if inactive lutetium is there, we don't have to bother much about it. Only concern is that 177 m lutetium, which is 160 days. That is why I showed you the amount of 177 m lutetium which is produced. It's in the level of nanocuries per millicurie of lutetium. So exactly. Exactly, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully it will come one day. Now, means what I wanted to say is production also was not very simple. We had to do a lot of, because we were puzzled as to what is happening, because this contribution of epithermal neutrons we never considered. All the time we are getting more specific activity. At the same time, you irradiate for a longer time, the activity actually diminishes, because there's severe target burnup. Yes, you had some questions? Yeah. Yes, it does concur, and that is the reason we have tried to see that we are doing the irradiation at a for a particular period of time, and at that particular, because for us the flux is the same, so we are doing the irradiation for a particular period of time to take care of the fact that we get the that ratio, we can keep it. No, we don't. In the initial stages we used to do. You get it. Is it? But in the initial stages we used to do it, but at present, when it has become a routine production, we don't do it at all. It is worth doing it. What you get, okay.
Same net dose. One month later, same net dose.
Okay, so what would you suggest? Means giving us a reference.
You have to give some reference.
Okay, okay. Okay, okay. Fine. Yeah, but just to calculate, yeah, whether what they are saying, what is being said is correct or not.
Yeah.
Okay. No, but you know what?
In their case, it doesn't matter too much.
It doesn't matter.
This or that.
In fact, it is beneficial for us. See, it is beneficial for us. And this ratio what I showed you, means if you remember, I have shown you one SD value also. So we have done it over a period of many irradiations and we have arrived at that particular value.
So more is okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You line up 10 patients and you run out
of it. Exactly. Okay, for us it is beneficial, yeah. For us it's beneficial. Thank you so much.